Welcome back to the Petcash Pod presented by ProFluence Sports. I'm your host, Andrew Petcash. As always, I appreciate you tuning in. And something you could do to really help us continue to get great guests on and increase the reach would be to leave a five-star review and then hit the follow button to stay updated on the most recent podcast. Never miss another one. We have a ton more great guests coming up. As always, you can listen to the podcast at profluence.com, see all of them that we've had with descriptions. Today, we had another great guest in James Giglio. He is the founder and CEO of MVP Interactive. They do a bunch of cool stuff around immersive engagement and making sure that fans and their technology stay connected. And we go through some case studies. They've done some really cool stuff and they're building a new ad platform, which you want to hear about. He also wrote the book Beyond the Jumbotron, which has a ton of great insights on fan engagement. We touch on some of that. All in all, great podcast episode. Hope you enjoy this one. Without further ado, let's dive in. James, appreciate you hopping on today. Newly formed author and newly recently to Pittsburgh, wasn't a Primanis fan, but that's okay. We'll let that one slide. We said you didn't get the right thing, but give us a little of your background and tell us a little bit about this book as well. Sure. Excited to hear more, and that will lead us. I mean, the book's where this whole podcast is going anyway. So I feel like Joe Rogan. Hopefully, I don't think we're going to sell a million copies for you, but we might get close.
It's okay. No intention. I always joke. Well, number one, thank you for having me, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here. And I do joke that I think I'm the only author who has ever published a book without thinking that anyone was ever going to read it. So it's always, it's a pleasure to see the 50 or so Amazon reviews that I do have on the book. And so my expectations, I try not to have many. And so it's been nice to see that people are enjoying it. And my colleague, Natasha French, has been doing a great job getting the book actually in the hands of college professors and sports management courses that have been taking a real special interest. And by the way, the book is called Beyond the Jumbotron, Creating Fan Experiences Through Immersive Technology. And for viewers here, I'm holding the book up and it's nice. I don't have my blurred background on, so you can see it with a clear shot. Right. I'm going to pause here. And so like, even if you scan this,
I was going to say, that's smart. You got the QR code on there.
And that's a surprise and delight. So if you do scan this, there's a special treat for you guys. So my name is James Giglio. I'm the founder and CEO and author of Beyond the Jumbotron and founder of a company called MVP Interactive. And so we're a full-service creative technology company that creates some of the best-in-class fan experience technologies through a wide range of immersive technologies, augmented reality, virtual reality, full scope of mixed reality technologies. And so we've been fortunate enough to work with, over the past 10 years, 11 years really, with some of the world's best sports brands, sports teams, leagues, sponsors for not only game day activations, but some of the big tentpole events like the Super Bowl, NFL Draft, All-Star Games, and things of the like. And so our thesis has always been to really bridge the passion and fanfare of what it is to attend a sport or entertainment event and allow immersive technology to really open up a line of communication with brands from a consumer engagement standpoint. And whether I knew it at the time, attending games as a young kid, you're probably too young for this, but there was, believe it or not, a time that you would attend a game where, quite literally, you would walk the concourse to individuals or brand ambassadors literally yelling to sort of fill out paper applications for credit cards or, contact information to receive a towel or a foam finger or a keychain or sunglasses or, some type of tchotchke that had some branding on it. And that was a level of marketing. And, everything has its time and place. And I just thought that was such a bizarre way for brands to really resonate a brand message with a particular consumer. And so, I was working for an out-of-home advertising company in the mid to late 2000s. And as you know, in 2008, in the advent of the iPhone, apps were exploding and technology was really emerging into our normal day-to-day lives and changing the way that we lived. And you know, we were well beyond the internet boom and bust, you know, in the early 2000s. But, you know, my generation, Gen X, proudly the greatest generation. No, I'm kidding. you know, we really learned, you know, we had the experience of living with and without technology and learning with it. And so, you know, we had a unique position to really see the value and detriment of both sides of it, right? And so I think I was fortunate enough to really see where the emergence of connectivity was and how it was going to change our lives. And, you know, just generally growing up a sports fan, I always felt that I had a passion to wanting to be involved in sports and just innately having some desire to be in and around sports. I was, you know, fairly athletic in high school, and I was fortunate enough to play in college as well. And, you know, I think for many of us that dream, you know, ends in college for a lot of us. And so, but you know, you really never lose it completely, whether it's, you know, watching it on TV or playing in, you know, pickup games on the weekends and such. And so ironically, I was never really a technologist, quite honestly. And I always joke that, you know, 15 years ago, I didn't know how to plug in a computer. And now it's like, you know, I've been able to assemble, you know, these, you know, massively advanced kiosks and things. And so just a testament, if you put your mind to something, you really can accomplish some things that you didn't think that were possible. But I had essentially just saw this movement and how apps were really taking over our culture. And I just thought that, you know, the way that the world was moving, you know, just leveraging immersive technology was going to be a way that consumers and brands would connect with each other.
Well, first off, we're delighted to have two good speakers today. So all the audio is going to be good for everyone. I don't know, when we were talking, I was just thinking about that. Of usually my editor's like, oh man, this audio is going to be tough to fix up. So it's going to be good, but not to get us off topic. From a fan perspective, when you look at that, you know, what do you even define a fan as? Is when you're talking about fan engagement and creating this interaction, when you pull the curtain back, you know, what do you even label a fan as? Where do you start in this journey? Because obviously you're trying to put on the end production of it, but you got to think about it from, you know, first principles or whatever, you know, jargon people are talking about these days. It's got to start somewhere.
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, and I think the word fan really doesn't necessarily have to be tied to a particular sports team, right? I mean, it could be a fan of an individual. It could be a fan of a brand. I think it really comes down to an affinity and a sentiment, right? And so if you think of your favorite musician, your favorite brand, your favorite team, your favorite person, you could be a fan of all of those. And I think, you know, it's that emotional connection that you have with that thing that, you know, creates that affinity. And so, you know, I think what technology for us allows us to really create those fans with is to further enhance that affinity or sentiment of sharing that memory. And so it always seemed super tangential to a sport event when you have a passion, you have a fan of an attendance, in attendance of a particular brand, meaning the team, that wants to share a memory. And then you may not have a fan of a particular brand, but you have this sort of opportunity to engage in a thing that is going to add to the affinity of the experience. Guess what? You know, it's an opportunity to become a fan of another thing because now you're tied to that emotion. And so it's really being, you know, being holistically tied to an experience and creating a memory. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, being a fan of something and being in the industries that we're in it's really being in an experience.
Do you think that's crafted from a young age, or where do you think we start to really develop those fandoms? And do you think it sticks? I was introduced to the Steelers. I'll probably be a Steelers fan my whole life.
I would hope so. I really do hope that is a innate positive quality in all of humans, right? I really do think that, you know, if you look at a nature versus nurture kind of perspective, that innately people are a good human beings are good, right? And so when you have that innate quality, I think we are born positive and loving, and that's the human condition. And so, you know, we are communal, right? And so I think as mammals, just looking at it biologically and scientifically, we are sort of pack animals. And I think, geez, I mean, even thinking back of the COVID era, think about of all of the social distancing and all of these, you know, restrictions that we had and what it did to society. And I think that just validated, you know, who we were and are as a population and how important that human connectivity is. And so yeah, I do think that happens at a young age. And, you know, it's critically important that all of that is natured and nurtured together. And so creating fandom with your siblings, your parents, your family is, you know, all a part of that. So yeah, I would really hope so from a human perspective that it does start young. Yeah.
And now just with, I mean, you see it every day, and of course it's going to be slanted negative often, but with artificial intelligence and all of these next developments and these lines somewhat becoming blurred of humans and machines. And so when you talk about immersive technology and a lot of what you're building, I guess, where do you see it going next? And what are some of the call outs in there, whether positive or negative?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I was actually moderating a panel at South by Southwest a couple of weeks ago. And there was a gentleman after our session for the Q&A. He worked for an NBA property, and he had, I had a colleague from a pretty prominent brand agency on our panel, and he directed a question towards that individual because they handle both talent and brand. And he said, you know, with the advancement of AI and imagery and likeness being able to be manipulated, how do you see, you know, protection against your clients and against fraud and, you know, all of the illicit things that could happen with that? And you know, at that point, I mean, there's really nothing that you can do from, you know, that illegal perspective. And so my comment was that I think, and I do stand on the side of where Elon Musk has publicly stated that there will be a point and need of regulation for AI oversight, because the monsters could kill each other, right? If this goes unfettered, right? And so I really don't think it will get there, because I do think that, you know, the powers that be will step in. I hopefully not too late, but I think the technology is powerful enough that, and I think, you know, history has proven itself that things that are unchecked can create damage beyond anyone's belief. And so I would just hope history doesn't repeat itself to that degree, but I do think that there would be some need of regulation and but conversely, as an optimist, you know, I think there's a lot of power that AI is going to warrant all of us and, you know, help us create and build. And, you know, really, if we lean into it properly, it's going to make our lives tremendously more helpful and make our workflows easier. And, you know, we can adapt to our day to day and make our lives better. You know, and that's, I try to do it in my daily activity here, you know, at work. And, you know, I encourage it, whether it's on our software development side of things or, you know, even in our sales and marketing, if trying to tweak our workflows and use it technologies to its benefit, for sure. But yeah, if it goes unchecked and unfettered, like anything, it could go awry. So, but,
yeah. And sort of the problem is, it's not like nuclear weapons, where, you know, we drop one because we want to see, it's really bad, but okay, we can never do that again. AI, it's like it gets out, shoot, like you can't pull that back in. So
yeah,
you want to see what it can do, but I don't know how it's going to play out. It's pretty cool time, but especially to see it in sports and this interaction is it's pretty powerful, and it's a good place to test it out. Now, as you MVP Interactive. Mm-hmm. As I guess, just give us a case study or give us some examples of some things you do, just so we can put, you know, some visualization around, we'll just call them buzzwords.
Okay. In terms of our traditional product line or things in AI in particular? Or just,
either, yeah, a little bit okay. of what a, yeah.
Yeah, well, traditionally, I mean, geez, I mean, we can kind of go through some level of a chronology because it, you know, one of the challenges that we face as a creative technology company is that we sit in this Venn diagram of, you know, technology and marketing, right? And both operate at the speed of light, right? Yeah. So, you know, you can imagine like, you know, we founded the company in, you know, in 2012. Which light years in both marketing and technology, right? So in 2012, when we had no product and, you know, we just had ideas and I was pitching like, you know, like the vision of what MVP was, the NBA was our very first client. And I went into the league office. I was like, all right, listen, I got this prototype. It's a 7-foot kiosk with a touch screen. And what it does is going to make a virtual digital bobblehead of your fans. And so your fans are going to walk up to the kiosk and they're going to select like, you know, their favorite East or West jersey. They can do these fun hairdos and then it's going to take this photo and it's going to morph their face into this. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about? Like this is pre Snapchat, right? Snapchat at that point was just like a deleting photo app and there was no face filters. There was no terminology for this stuff. And I was just saying, yeah, facial recognition and augmented reality right over their heads. And they were like, we're just happy to have Wi-Fi in the conference room here. You know, so most people didn't know what I was talking about, but they said, hey, you know, that sounds really cool. Like, do you want to bring your machine to the All-Star game? And I said, sure. And so, you know, they're like, we're not going to pay you, but we'll give you any ticket you want to the event. You know, you want to go to the All-Star game, this dunk contest, 3-point kind of. So this was our moment, right? And so that was our very first product. We called it the Morphing Station, right? And so God bless the NBA. They gave us ideal prime real estate right next to the autograph stage. This was February 2013, NBA jam session. This was like we bet the farm, barely had enough money to get down there. I put the kiosk there, wired the thing up right before the doors open and magically it goes on. And for the 3 or 4 day weekend, I don't know if you've ever been to a jam session, but it is like a casino 24/7. It is a extravaganza. It is the NBA Super Bowl for sure. And gratefully, good placement. Technology was a hit. Everyone loved it. The line was, you know, out the door the entire time. And, you know, we were able to walk away from that show with a legitimate 6-figure contract with the league-wide sponsor, which was BBVA Compass at that time, which is a Southeast region. Well, it was a big Spanish bank and they kind of came over to the United States and branched out in, throughout the country. But in any event, so that was our first product and it was augmented reality, but it was essentially a face filter booth, right? In which most people would notably known as Snapchat. And that, you know, when Snapchat got really popular, I was like, damn it. You know, I went the hard way and went hardware. I didn't go mobile. And so, but it was a validating idea and if nothing else. And so that was our first product. But then as we were able to scale up a little bit and get new clients, we built what we called the gaming wall product, which was a very large video display wall that we created a host of simulated sporting activities. So your virtual field goal game, your virtual home run derby game, virtual pop a shot, all using gesture 3D technology. So you were quite literally, your body was the remote. If you think about your Xbox Kinect or, you know, Nintendo Wii, that type of experience outside of your home, but inside a venue. And so we were able to basically build, you know, a whole suite of gaming interactives for venues that, you know, fans could really enjoy, you know, these simulated sporting activities. And then, so that gave, you know, a nice portfolio of those interactive games. And then as VR came onto the scene, we sort of developed a whole range of 3D tours of particular stadiums and 360 video shoots and, again, web AR experiences and a whole host of creative motion gesture based interactions for art installations or trade shows, things of that nature. And then I would say, you know, the culmination of our lives work, if you will, in terms of renovating an entire concourse came last year where we activated and renovated a 4,000 square foot fan zone for the Columbus Blue Jackets where we consulted with them in the off season and they said, hey, you know, here's a space that we're looking to really renovate. We want to take it from its old sort of bar meeting space and then really focus in on this ultimate fan zone where we want to focus in on esports, we want advanced technology, and we want to, you know, make this a real destination throughout, you know, nationwide arena. So we mapped out a full plan for them, and we came up with the, it's now sponsored, but at the time it was called the Fifth Line Fan Zone. So we essentially replicated the team locker room and put in a 7-bay esports station. So fans can come in, sit in the team locker room, but play, you know, NHL Live, and they have esports tournaments there. And then we essentially created a Topgolf for hockey environment where using high technology and high frame rate sensors, there's a virtual slap shot game. And then there's a goalie game where we're shooting pucks at foam pucks. So everyone's safe, but we're shooting pucks at you. And, you know, fans are able to curate all of their photos and videos of them participating in this. And so it's been tremendously popular. And, you know, that's something that is going to live in that stadium for years to come. And it's been really successful. And so that kind of highlights a few years of and technology.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah. I appreciate you going through that. I guess the natural progression off that is what's next. Where are you thinking about building in? Where are you? I mean, you talked a little bit about hardware versus software and just the evolution, but where does this go next?
Yeah. So we are actually rolling out a new program here in the next couple of weeks, and we're really excited about it. And so over the last 10 years, we've obviously built a nice reputation of, you know, brand equity in terms of the quality of work that we do and the nice Rolodex of property owners and partners and brands that we've worked with, and then capabilities of technology that we build. And so learning the sports business has been a valuable lesson. And so I think as great of a business that we've been able to build, you know, we're really looking to kind of scale and bring it to the next level. And so we've realized the sort of handicap in sports sponsorship and the way the sports business model works is it's really a closed door for long-term multi-million dollar sponsorship deals, right? And that leaves an entire segment of brands and marketers closed out of a very attractive consumer base. And that's the sports fan, right? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want, you name a brand, endemic or not, that wouldn't want to market to a sports fan. And so we thought, hey, you know, we've got a decade long experience of building great quality product, having great relationships with brands, property owners, teams, leagues, et cetera. How do we really rethink our business model? And so what we thought was, what if we sort of reverse engineered our approach and said, what if we opened up that entire market of non-endemic brands, people that have been boxed out for years, give them access to those properties that have been closed off, because we're not going to require them the multi-year, multi-million dollar sponsorship deals, because our gaming devices give them an entry level budget opportunity to activate on concourse where we can subsidize the team, essentially pay them as a tenant to advertise and use our immersive gaming experiences for these brands. So everyone wins. So now we're allowing non-competitive brands, meaning that they're, you know, of course, we're not going to bring Pepsi into a Coca-Cola venue, right. But we're going to bring in a mid-level regional brand that would love to market to regional sports, to professional sports team to A, enhance the game day experience with this immersive gaming unit, to get their brand awareness, collecting user-generated content and being able to retarget consumers. The team benefits on a host of reasons, because A, their game day experience is enhanced. B, they're getting subsidized revenue by said advertisers. And three, they now open up a new dialogue with a new potential long-term sponsor. And so we're super excited about what we're calling the MVP Interactive Advertising Network. And the response to the community has been overwhelmingly positive. And, you know, we hope to get some some upcoming press over the next couple of weeks here, rolling that out. And, you know, we're signing up properties to join the network and, you know, bringing on new brands and looking to place ads, you know, throughout the country here.
That's awesome. Yeah. So really just leveraging a lot of your relationships and bringing it downstream a little bit to everyone else. That makes sense. From a, I mean, you mentioned being in sports for a decade now, a little bit more on say the personal side, but a lot of people that do listen to these are looking to start their own thing or are looking to really take their company in sports to the next level. You know, any advice or insight that you've learned starting with walking into the NBA in 2012 and slowly getting into now working with all these different brands and leagues and properties and teams?
Yeah. Sports is very hard. It's not what it appears, you know, on television or what you may think. And I think that's a misconception that a lot of the general public has, right? And one of the lessons that we learned is despite player salaries, despite billion-dollar valuations of the entities themselves, the sports business is a very margin-lean industry when it comes to certain line items that revolves around marketing or fan experience or sort of ancillary technologies, even when it comes to some operational technologies that are outside of maybe sports science or investments into the athletes themselves. And so my suggestion is don't let that prohibit you from taking that risk or believing in your product and sort of scaling. But I would just sort of have a reasonable expectation and do your research to know that maybe when it comes to financing or your run rate or, you know, your reserves, to make sure that you really know that this road could be a little longer than you anticipate, because sure, getting those logos as a part of your client list are extremely valuable, and you may need to make, you know, that freemium model work for you where, you know, you're going to do some bartering. And that's valuable. You know, that one or two first clients are going to be free, and there's definite value in that. But, you know, you would be surprised how little investment there is in teams able to invest into your product. And that's not to say it's impossible, because we've been around for a decade, right? So, you know, so it is possible. But I think looking back, I think my benefit was being naive to that fact. But if somebody were to tell me that, I probably would have been scared shitless and not have done it, which I'm grateful that I didn't, right? Or I didn't know that. But it is a cold, hard fact. It took us a full year to learn the sports business wasn't what I thought it was.
Do you see that changing at all? Or have you seen any?
I have, yeah. Especially when the marketing trends have changed. And again, when I was talking about AR and VR and all of this in 2012, and people were like, whoa, we're just trying to get Wi-Fi and a new Jumbotron. Like, you know, when experiential, like even as a marketing category, was like, oh no, we're just going to do Bago, and like, we're just going to do the safe things or what we know. That has all shifted, right? And you even see the facilities changing. Like how many, you know, back then it was maybe the new AT&T stadium and maybe a couple of mixed use lifestyle sporting arenas, where now every new arena is bringing retail and condos and shopping and mixed use. Like the fan experience is now considered a must have and not a nice to have the way it was 10 years ago. And so that is shifting. And I do think the investment in fans and the pressure for properties to really consider what the game day experience is and then to invest in that is more of an issue now than it was 10 years ago. Because let's face it, being at home with all of the technology and the comfort of being at home is really good. It is good. And it's only going to get better. I mean, I have an Apple Vision Pro, and watching the PGA on that thing is phenomenal.
You like it?
I do. It's still, I would not recommend it for the general public for a lot of reasons, but I think two or three generations from now, it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. For sure.
That's awesome. Well, James, yeah, I mean, there's so much we could go on probably for an hour, if not longer, but just in the essence of time and where we like to keep them, you know, where can we learn more about MVP Interactive, your book, yourself, for follow-up.
Yeah, absolutely. So MVP-interactive.com is our website. You can follow us on all the socials at MVPinteractive.com. My website is jamesgiglio.com. You can find Beyond the Jumbotron on Amazon or any North American book retailer, both physical locations or digital, Goodreads, etc. We have a podcast as well. Andrew, maybe you could be a guest on our podcast. But yeah, good old Google works too. You can just search for us and
Just put it in ChatGPT now, I guess, or whatever. <That's> whatever's coming next. I don't know.
That's right.